Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, April 29th, 2026, on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host Ron Meniza. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at FranStorchND for 30 days, and also on my YouTube channel at Radio Naturopath. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. I wanted to consult with Ron on his hernia repair, so we'll do that in just a second when he comes back in. Okay, so you had a hernia repair earlier this week, or last week. How did that go?
Oh, it went great. I just love dedicating my body to the medical world. It's just a lovely thing.
So why did you have a hernia repair?
Because I had a heart repair 5 years ago, and in the process of having my heart repaired, they put drain holes in your chest or below your rib cage, right below your rib cage.
Yeah.
And they use that to drain fluids when they're from the heart repair, when I had my quadruple bypass. And one of those holes herniated.
Oh.
After about 2 years, I started to notice a little bit of puffiness around one of the holes.
Yeah.
And one of the repaired. It was surgically repaired, but I happened to notice that. And then it's been progressively getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And when I spoke to the medical staff that was working on me, the surgery staff that was working on me for this repair, one of the people looked at me and said, "This is not uncommon at all." She said, "This happens all the time." So apparently it's a side effect that you can get from having surgery, is that where the incision was put in, you may have a possibility of something herniating.
You have a thin omentum anyway. That's the layer of fascia that covers your abdominal organs. And you have a tendency to hernias anyway. You've already had 2 inguinals and 1 femoral repaired. Do you have another femoral that has to be repaired at some point?
No. Oh,
okay.
I'm all done. This is it. Four
we
down.
Hope so.
Four down. That's it. I'm done.
Yeah, we hope so.
No more. We're hoping for no more. I don't expect to see another one of these in the near or distant future.
Well, that's good.
And, as long as I behave myself and don't push too hard, I should be fine. And I will find out tomorrow what the definition of push too hard is.
Right.
But currently, it's no more than 10 to 15 pounds.
Which is frustrating because you're building a...
I have a lot of things to do. I have a world to conquer. I mean,
yes,
I'm not done yet, you know? Yeah. So, you know, I've got that. I've got all these classes I teach. I want to ride my bike up to the community center. I want to start using my bike more for commuting. So, yeah, I want to get back into action, but I can't get too much into action because I don't want to damage the repair.
Not yet. Yeah, and you have to figure out how long
you
need to stay calm to let this thing heal.
Right, because behind what you saw this morning, I showed you my little cut and swelling thing that's there. There's a mesh. There's a piece of Kevlar mesh which is behind it. And that is basically creating a new wall inside of me which keeps things from puffing out.
You're bionic.
I am the great rebuild of all
You
times.
Have hardware.
I am, yeah. And I'm only 39 years old, so I just don't understand why this happens.
I know, it's ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah, in my mind, I'm 39 years old.
I hear ya. It's like things we used to do that we can't think about doing right now, like riding a metric. I would like to ride a metric.
Right.
I don't know if or when I'll be able to do that again.
Well, you'll be able to do it when you're able to do it.
Whenever that is.
And that will be determined by how you heal and what happens. And I would love to do that again.
But
right now, I know the reality of my fitness right now is that I'm good in a range of anywhere from once fit, 25 to 35 miles.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
Yeah.
You know, if I can go out and ride my bike for a couple hours, that's a really beautiful thing.
It's true. We rode our bikes on Saturday. And so, you know, I'm still recovering from this femoral neuralgia. And when I saw Dr. Lantner, he said, I can do what I want to do as long as I tolerate it. And I'm not going to hurt myself more. It's just I may have some pain that I have to deal with, but I'm not going to cause more damage. That's what he said. So I've been testing it, and you created a 20-mile route for us, and we went to this lovely cafe called Always More in Eastford, and we started from the Eastford Elementary School, and I convinced the group to go 20 miles instead of 26, and boy, am I glad that I did, because that route, according to Ride with GPS, was supposed to be 65 feet per mile. Mm. And when I actually did it, my computer recorded it was actually 81.
Don't always believe what you see on a computer.
Oh, my goodness. It was incredibly hilly. And so I had some extra pain after that. But I iced and I did some PT and I rolled my legs out and stretched. And I wasn't too bad. And then yesterday I went out and I rode 10 miles easy and flat, flat-ish. I mean, because you can't get really flat around here. But I only climbed 473 feet instead of 1,620 miles. Right. And that was very pleasant. And then I stretched and PT'd and did stuff after that. And I felt pretty good yesterday. My nerve felt pretty good. And I was very active yesterday. And it felt nice to be really active to the point where I'm like, do I really need to have this pain injection tomorrow? But I'm going to go through with it because I definitely do still have pain and numbness, and I want to go through it and see what happens. I'm anxious because that's how I am. But also, they're going to put me under they're going to put me under light sedation, which I'm not thrilled about.
Yeah, you know, I just went through that, and it was like really, I mean, I had a,
You didn't have light sedation, you had general anesthesia.
It was general.
No, you had what's called general anesthesia. It's extremely different from what I'm going to have.
But it was like really, they've gotten much better at it.
You're in and out of it, I know. I think they're only going to give me midazolam, which is a benzodiazepine, which I think was in my cocktail. It's generally in your, when you have general anesthesia, it's part of your cocktail.
Yeah.
They give you this benzodiazepine, and it's to calm your anxiety and calm you down. But it can also cause grogginess and amnesia and stuff, which I'm not thrilled about. And I did last one without sedation. And what Dr. Sam told me is that they, when once you've had surgery and you're going to go back for a, you're going to go back for another shot, a pain shot. Mm-hmm. Once you've had surgery, he likes to do sedation. That's the protocol. I had not had surgery, he would not be doing sedation. And that's why. So for whatever reason, I don't know if I'm likely to have more pain from the injection because I've had surgery. I don't know.
I talked to someone this morning. They said that they, it's over with very quickly, but it's a very sharp pain when they inject you.
Yeah, well, I had that.
So you need to do this. It's not like you're doing it every day.
But I did. I had the sharp pain last time, and I was okay. I felt it.
Yeah, see? But, so you know what to expect.
But the injection the whole process takes maybe 10 minutes. It's really short. Remember how when I had my eyes done and it was over in 5 or 10 minutes?
Right.
It's like that. Last time when I had it done, it was like I said, it's worse getting your teeth done. Yeah. Which I'm having done on Wednesday. But that's much worse because you're lying there, you're anticipating, you hear the drilling, and they give you a painful shot, and then you're numb.
Right.
And that's a lot worse than this.
See, we've reached that age where, we're the reason why people go to medical school.
I know. I'm the reason I went to medical school. It's very interesting.
Well,
so I'm dealing with a tooth frustration, so let me give you an update on teeth. So as you get older, you'd have more decay, and it depends on the person. Some people are fabulously lucky and they don't get a lot of decay.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's unusual in our society to have somebody who like never eats sugar, never drinks coffee, never consumes foods that, are acidic. And what you want to do is beat back the Streptococcus mutans strain that's in your mouth. You also get other bacteria that make volatile sulfur compounds. That's what gives you bad breath.
Right.
But, your family, I mean, you have had many, how many of your own teeth do you have? Do you know?
Wow, we're getting down a handful.
I know.
I've got, I mean, crowns count as my own teeth, right?
Kind of, sorta.
So if you take crowns into effect, then I have most, but not all, of my upper teeth.
Right.
And I have two of my lower teeth.
You only have two of your lower teeth?
Yeah.
Everything on bottom, you only have two.
Is a partial denture, yeah.
Yes. So, all your molars and...
They're gone.
Oh, my goodness.
That's all gone.
So you have maybe 18 of your own teeth.
If that.
Yeah, right.
If that.
Wow.
So, and, you know, the idea and plan is, should I somehow, you know, fall into, you know, Moneybag's wealth, I could always put implants.
Yes.
In. But right
that's
now,
if they decide your jaw can handle it.
We need to keep the jaw healthy and all that. There's a whole, you know, the dental thing is just, I'm not going to say it's a scam because I don't want to go that direction, but it is a bit of a, it's a very profitable industry. Let's
right.
put it that way. And the problem is not with most people. It's with some people who just have a genetically historical situation with their dental health.
Well, I just wonder if you and I never drank coffee and never ate sugar and never ate fruit.
I don't think it has anything to do with it.
Because it's true that some people have great teeth and do all of that, and some people don't.
Fran, but I rode my bike countless miles my entire life, and I ended up with a quadruple bypass. I don't think that it had anything to do
genetics.
With the fact that
there's
other
absolutely,
than genetics.
There's absolutely genetics involved. I mean, I talked to my mother, and my mother says, oh, I'm not getting any cavities at all.
Yes, she is.
Come to
she just doesn't tell you the truth.
Well, I don't know, but... I wouldn't say that, but she also, I know that she has four implants.
Yeah.
And Nancy is in need of some crowns, and Nancy's right. 3.5 years behind me. And so I'm always very interested in what is the, what's going on? Is there some kind of prophylaxis that I can do? And I brush my teeth, and I brush with xylitol. I don't brush my teeth with fluoride. But I brush my teeth with a lovely xylitol toothpaste. I floss my teeth. I use a dental pick because my hygienist told me to do that to open up the spaces between my gums. When you open up the spaces between your gums, you expose any bacteria that's there to the air because the bacteria that tends to give you decay is anaerobic. So if you expose it to oxygen, they die.
Yeah.
And then I water floss my teeth after that. And then I use a rinse. So I was thinking about the rinse, and I'm wondering if the rinse is too strong, that the rinse is killing good bacteria too.
I think, here's what I think. And you know you have a car, right?
Yeah.
And your car has tires on it.
Mm.
And the more miles you drive on the car, the tires wear
yeah.
out. And
mm-hmm.
then you have to replace the tires,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
I think that we as humans get to a point where we just wear our teeth out.
That's probably true, because the problem with teeth is teeth are not dynamic tissue, whereas bones, you break a bone, you mend it. You
right.
don't mend teeth.
No.
Teeth just get damaged and then they have to be fixed because you got
right.
what you got. That's
right.
basically what's going
right.
on.
So I think it's just a matter of, it's not overused, it's just...
Continual use.
And wear and tear, and that's essentially what happens.
So I was thinking about this antimicrobial rinse, and I was wondering, but one of the things about oral hygiene is your microbiome. So the microbiome of your mouth is very important. Interestingly, my dentist doesn't seem to care about this. She doesn't talk to me about it. She doesn't talk to me about the microbiome.
Mm-hmm.
And neither does that. I've never heard the words microbiome out of my dentist or my hygienist's mouth, which is
interesting.
I know. Interesting. Exactly.
Yeah.
So I talked to them about, I'm wondering if this rinse is killing too much of the good bacteria. She didn't seem to have an opinion either way on it. However, if I see you pulling your phone out there, which may mean you're Googling it, if you look it up, it says that that could be a factor. So I've made a decision, and I'm not using a conventional you know, drugstore brand of mouthwash. I'm using a holistically oriented natural brand of mouthwash that has a lot of wonderful herbs in it. It has CoQ10 in it, has tea tree oil, neem, and it has plenty of xylitol and all kinds of stuff in it. And I'm wondering if it's too strong. So I've made a decision to stop using it. And instead, I'm going to use a much more basic oral rinse that has xylitol, mint, and calcium hydroxyapatite. And the hydroxyapatite is going to help to remineralize my teeth. And that's the rinse that I'm going to use. And then after I use that rinse that has the hydroxyapatite, because hydroxyapatite is studied to help to remineralize your teeth, then she gave me high-dose fluoride toothpaste, which I finally caved and decided to use because I read that fluoride, and say what you will about fluoride, you just make sure you don't use a lot of it. When you brush with it, you use a pea size. You don't use it to clean your teeth. You use it as a paint on after you brush your teeth. And I, in addition to the fluoride, I use hydroxyapatite. So I'm brushing with a pea-sized amount of this high-dose fluoride, this prescription fluoride toothpaste, and then I swish the foam in my mouth and I spit it out. I don't swallow it, which is what you're supposed to do. And then after that, I add in some hydroxyapatite toothpaste and I swish that around in my mouth and I leave that in. Hydroxyapatite is safe to swallow in small amounts. Fluoride, you want to avoid doing that. And at night, after I'm done that, I've made the decision to use a probiotic lozenge. So, because again, they haven't talked about the microbiome, and I don't know if it's just, there's lots of things that affect your oral microbiome, and one of them is if you eat too much sugar, that will feed bad bacteria, and you make plaque, and when you use xylitol, the great thing about xylitol is it breaks up biofilms because the bacteria that cause decay, like the strep mutans, makes biofilms, which is a protective protein layer that the bacteria make to protect themselves in their colonies. So if you use xylitol breaks up biofilms. That's how it works. Of course, I was using the xylitol toothpaste and doing all this stuff and still getting decay. One of the things I was also doing is I was not always getting to my teeth at night. I wonder if the most important thing is getting that probiotic in. Because if you just start taking a dental probiotic lozenge and doing nothing else, you're going to get rid of your bad breath. Why are you getting rid of your bad breath? Because you're killing the bacteria that make the volatile sulfur compounds, the VSCs. Right. So after I'm done with everything, at night, my routine is brush with xylitol toothpaste, and the xylitol toothpaste I have has an enamel saver in it, which is mostly silica. So I have the xylitol toothpaste, then I floss, then I pick, then I water floss. Now I have a bridge, and my bridge is beautiful. It's really nice.
They do a really good job. It's I like had teeth. Someone comment to
it's
me
it's like
in the
having
hospital.
Teeth. It's great. They're it's really nice, and it's so much nicer than having the hole there.
Yeah.
And it's a permanent bridge, and she showed me how to use a needle, a floss needle to pull the floss underneath
it. Oh, I've got those.
It.
Yeah, I use
those.
Do
you use them?
Oh, yeah.
I don't use them.
They're hard. They're hard to use. You get used to it after a while.
Well, that's why I use the water floss.
I also do that.
Yeah.
But so I was told that that's not enough. But that's,
right.
You know,
I don't
whatever.
Think they think it's enough either. So I haven't been doing the needle. So I floss, I pick, I water floss, then I'm going to use the hydroxyapatite rinse, then I brush with the fluoride and swish and spit, and then, this seems like a lot, and then I add in hydroxyapatite, and I leave that in as well, because when you do fluoride and hydroxyapatite together, you make fluoroapatite. So the deal is that fluoride will plug the lacunae. It's not really part of your oral dentition. It's not really part of your enamel, but it does block the lacunae so the bacteria can't get in, which is why they have you use it. And then if you combine it with hydroxyapatite, I saw some studies that said that use them together, it's better than either one alone.
I'm reading all about hydroxyapatite right here.
So the fluoride is the fluoride will help to protect you for the future because you get the fluoride on there. Fluoride also raises the pH of your saliva, so you have less acidic saliva. And then if you combine it with hydroxyapatite is actually what your teeth are made of. Yeah. So then you have a re-enamel, something that really does re-enamel your teeth. Any white spots or holes that are not down to cavities, it will help to re-enamel them. So if you use them together, you make fluoroapatite, which is even stronger. So I'm doing that. And then once I'm all done with that, I go in the kitchen, I have to see if, I actually don't know if the probiotic is shelf stable or not, but I have it in the fridge just in case. I have to read the bottle. I forgot. And I have these little lozenges and they're delightfully mint flavored. And you throw one in your mouth. The last thing you do before you go to sleep or after you brush your teeth. And then you don't drink anything else. You put this this probiotic in, and then it'll set up some nice oral bacteria for you.
Did you know that the hydroxyapatite was developed by NASA in the 70s?
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
And you wonder, I think I read that, and then everybody wonders why it's not promoted in the U.S.
Yeah, in Japan, it's the number one
thing
they use.
That's what they use in Japan. I know.
They don't do
fluoride at all. I know. Right. I know, right. They don't.
I'm reading true. All sorts of interesting things about it here.
But anyway. There's something about fluoride. The fluoride lobby and the dental lobby is very strong. The studies have all been done on fluoride in the U.S. Fluoridated water, taking fluoride pills, fluoride rinses. And my dentist is one of those. She has not talked to me about probiotics. She has not talked to me about killing my microbiome. And she's not talked to me about hydroxyapatite. It's really interesting. However, I was sitting, my dentist is very, very smart and she's lovely and I'm not going to leave her until she decides to finally retire. But I was sitting with the office manager because she was helping me to choose new dental insurance. And I have lozenges. So these are something you can have during the day. If you have a lot of decay, one of the things you can do is pop a xylitol lozenge during the day. Maybe once or twice, or like after lunch, if there's a time when you tend not to brush your teeth. They want me to brush my teeth, like be obsessive about brushing my teeth every time I freaking eat. I don't know if that's going to happen, but at my desk at work, I have these hydroxyapatite xylitol lozenges. I'll pop one of those in, and I also have the a special probiotic toothpaste that has some of the probiotic in it. And I throw that in my mouth and just spread it around. So if I'm not, to be realistically, I'm not going to brush my teeth every single time, but the probiotic deal is very easy to do because you can throw the paste in your mouth and you can also just pop a lozenge. And that, because be realistic, not everybody hits every single time. I mean, that one of the problems I have with brushing my teeth at night, and see if you can relate to this. You're it's the end of the day, you're in bed, you're all cozy, you're relaxing, and you get to a point where I can't even get up out of bed anymore. Mm-hmm. And my oral care routine, as you heard, is really long. It's a lot of stuff. So what I'm wondering is, here's me, who I'm very assiduous, I'm very responsible. And I have decent adherence. I don't have perfect adherence, but I have decent adherence. And I have to do this multi-step process to take care of my teeth. What do most people do? That's what I wonder. I have patients who are dental hygienists, and I said to them, so what percentage of your patients do you think are really good about brushing and flossing? They said, about 20.
Really?
Oh, yeah. That people are people for the most part. And yet, my dentist thinks I have a surprising amount of decay. I just guess my teeth are getting to that age. It's probably genetic. And whether or not, it's a problem for me to do the tooth care routine right. At the end of the day, right. I just need to prioritize it.
Well, just to set some things straight without putting any big numbers out there. The fluoride industry is a multi-billion dollar profit center.
And hydroxyapatite is not?
I don't know. I haven't looked that part up yet.
Right.
But that's because and it's projected to grow by at least from 14 to
because
23
you
billion.
Get
that's
the high dose. So when you buy when you get high dose prescribed fluoride toothpaste, it's 5,000 parts per million, 1.1% fluoride, and you have to have it prescribed. And that is, it's four times as much fluoride as you would get in a daily regular toothpaste, in an over-the-counter toothpaste. So So I don't know that if there's a lot of profit margin in that. I don't know. But hydroxyapatite, my dentist did not push hydroxyapatite.
Yeah, it's, just to give you an idea, it is a mere fraction of what they make on fluoride.
Huh. Is fluoride expensive?
Like I'm talking maybe a tenth of the...
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Huh.
So, this is about money.
You think part of it is about money?
I think a lot of it is about money.
Well, there's, she can't stop me from getting... But no, it's very easy to find...
Right.
Hydroxyapatite products. They're all over the internet. And
right.
You can get them at the drugstore, too. You can also buy... I haven't gone there just because it's expensive, but I might consider it. You can get hydroxyapatite varnish. So it's more expensive than getting the toothpaste and putting it on every day. But a varnish, I guess, adheres more.
Show that it's a much... better
fluoride
product.
Is a big profit center. So you can get fluoride
is all
varnishes.
About money, and this hydroxyapatite
is not so much. Yeah,
but
part of why hydroxyapatite is not so much is because dentists aren't pushing it.
Right, and what fluoride is pushing, they're pushing to put it into public water supplies.
Right. That's right.
And because...
And now RFK Jr. is pushing to get it out.
Right.
There's a problem with that, though, which I understand, which is that if, you and I have dental insurance, we're at a point where, not great, but we have it. And
we
dental...
do, but it's not... as useful as you would think it could
yes,
be.
Yes, if we didn't have decay, it would be great because
right.
it covers
it
your prophylaxis.
Cover cleanings, right.
Yeah, your cleanings are covered. Your any of your prophylaxis is covered.
Right.
But the problem is, and when I only needed prophylaxis, Dr. Shvarek said to me, "Why you probably don't need insurance because you're going to pay all this money for your insurance and it costs less to get your cleanings
right.
over the course of the year."
Right.
Well, that changed.
Well, and it does, and there's an age factor.
Yeah, there's an age factor, absolutely.
Right.
So the thing is...
And genetics.
So there's for me, there's a genetic component. There's absolutely an age component. The longer you're on the planet, the more wear there is on your teeth, because, as you said, your teeth wear out. And then there's also various reasons why your mouth might be dry. Your mouth can be dry if you have Sjogren's syndrome, which I don't. Sjogren's syndrome is an autoimmune condition where you make less saliva. You make less secretions all around, but you definitely make less saliva. So that will give you a dry mouth. If you have any kind of respiratory anything and you sleep with your mouth open, if your mouth is open at all during the night, your tissues can dry out. When you're postmenopausal, your tissues are not as... juicy and dry and juicy and moist. So you're more likely to get dry mouth after your menopause, which is definitely true for me.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't drink enough fluids,
right.
As I'm taking a sip of my water, if you don't drink enough fluids, you're going to get more of a dry mouth. So you have to make sure to do that as well. If you don't make enough saliva, saliva is what carries the beneficial bacteria and spreads it around to your teeth. So having water on board and having things that help you make saliva can be helpful. So on the one hand, lemon is great it's a sialagogue. It helps you to make saliva. But on the other hand, it's acidic. So you take the lemon, you put lemon in your water, and then you do your hydroxyapatite at night. And you can take your hydroxyapatite lozenges during the day. I have friends who don't go to the dentist. They go to the dentist if they absolutely need to, and absolutely need to means I have a toothache and I need a tooth pulled. That's it. And I do all this prophylaxis, and then it becomes a whole thing. One of my complaints, and maybe you can relate to this, is when you get older, is every week you have another doctor's appointment. And I have had doctor's appointments every week since I came back from Florida for my knee, for my back, for my eyes, and the dentist. The dentist has been the big one that I've had. I'm going on 10, 12 dentist appointments since my last prophylaxis. Actually, my last prophylaxis was a couple weeks ago, so I'm talking about my prophylaxis last fall. I've had, it's unbelievable. So hopefully I'll be okay for a while because I really upped my game on my oral care. I'm going to do the more hydroxyapatite. I'm going to make sure to brush my teeth at night, and I'm going to do that probiotic lozenge because I have a suspicion that I have a microbiome issue. And I'm going to address them because I think if you're not, even if you're using fluoride, I think my opinion is it's important to use hydroxyapatite too. And if you like to eat sweets, then you want to drink water right afterwards. And if you can brush, I also have to wonder if brushing your teeth itself.
It's wear and tear.
Hello. Where's the enamel? Yep.
Yeah, it's wear and tear.
And one of the things you're supposed to do is if you've eaten, it's a good idea to wait at least half an hour after you've eaten to brush because you disrupt your enamel when you eat. So that's a good
thing. Well, you could do a whole show on this, and you are.
I kind of am. It's really incredible. Well, the issue that I have is, listen to what I'm doing, this multi-step procedure that I'm doing at
all
night.
Right.
Brushing, flossing, picking, water flossing, rinsing, fluoride, hydroxyapatite, and probiotic. How many steps is that?
That's, you put a lot into it.
I know. And who's going to do that?
And yet, where are you?
Well, I mean, again, I could do better about making sure to do it at night.
Yeah.
That's not something.
But I think that you're probably way ahead of the game for most people, and yet still the genetic component comes in.
Then there's that I just have.
And I think that's
enamel
wear. That's what we deal with when we get older.
Yeah.
We don't know where our parents were at certain times or grandparents were at certain times. So, I mean, there was no history for. And when you go back to grandparents and great-grandparents, because we didn't have that kind of medical research and information behind it. And, you know, we now just, I mean, when you fill out a medical form now, one of the things they immediately go for is, what's your family history?
Family history.
They're always looking for family history.
Yeah.
Which makes me feel like I would love to have a genetic test done, but in this day and age, I'm a little nervous about having a genetic.
What kind of genetic test do you want to have done?
Just medical, you know, background on you know.
So you want to do like in 23andMe or something?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
But you know, of course, there is concern with that. Although I've been on the planet long enough that nobody's coming after me for anything.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter
much. So the thing is, if you do one of those genetic tests, that's something we should look into. What are the real risks to having your genome out there, you know, in a database somewhere? Right. Because what I want to do, I want to do Ancestry DNA, and then I want to run NutraHacker on myself. And I know that I have an MTHFR anomaly because I tested myself, which is the methylation defect where you have a hard time converting folic acid to activated folic acid. And if I don't take folic acid and B12 regularly, my homocysteine does go up a little bit. And I do have one copy of the gene that makes that happen. And I've seen, you know, when I'm stressed, physiologically stressed, I've seen the homocysteine be somewhat elevated. It's probably good right now because I'm regularly taking folic acid. I'm taking methylfolate and I'm taking methylated adenosyl hydroxycobalamin. So it's a methylated, and a reacted form of vitamin B12. So I'm not in a rush to do it, but it would be interesting to do. I know I don't have the A1298C version of the MTHFR, which tends to make you more anxious, and you need more N-acetylcysteine and stuff like that. So
you don't need to be more anxious.
No, I don't need to. And I am anxious, so I want to. That's why I want to see what my COMT is. That's your catechol-O-methyltransferase. And catechol-O-methyltransferase is a gene that breaks down your catecholamines, so your dopamine, your epinephrine, your norepinephrine, your a bunch of fight or flight hormones. And if you have an anomaly in that gene, your enzyme doesn't work as well, and it doesn't break down your catecholamines as well. So if you get hyped, your catecholamines don't break down as well, and you tend to be more hyped. And people with a certain version of that COMT gene don't do well with cannabis. And I'm kind of meh with cannabis. Like, I hadn't done cannabis in a long time. And I had a little bit to help with some sleep and pain issues for 2 days. And then I said, no, I'm not. Because I woke up lightheaded and groggy and dizzy. So I'm not, yeah. I'm not big on it for me.
Well, so. The AMA right now is very concerned about privacy issues.
Ah.
Just so you know.
So in terms of, genetic testing, they're...
And they're trying and lobbying to get more protection. New privacy standards.
Wow. Still,
the privacy standards are not where they should be.
I see.
That was just Google searched. But.
Hey, here's a hot tip. I like to watch the Today Show. They have a woman on there who comes on. She's lovely. Her name is Allie Love, and I think she taught SoulCycle or Peloton, one of those. I can't remember which she taught. But anyway, she comes on and she gives you health tips. And one of the health tips she says is simplify your morning routine. This is what she was talking about today. Simplify your morning routine. And one of the things she said was interesting. And I will wake up, and sometimes it's really hard for me to get moving in the morning. And I don't want to get moving. And I have this struggle with caffeine because I'm very sensitive to it. I got myself into a migraine situation last weekend. Not this past weekend, but a week ago. Where I had the shakes and then I had a headache for a day. And I had to be in bed with a headache. And so she said something very interesting. She said, if you're grabbing for coffee rather than water first thing, you might want to change that up. And I don't want to do caffeine today because I want my blood pressure to be reasonable tomorrow when I go to the surgery and if I the injection. And caffeine and sugar, if you do less caffeine and sugar, your blood pressure can be lower. So anyway, I didn't want to do any caffeine today. I had a little caffeine yesterday and the day before after not having it for a while. Felt so good. We went to the cafe and I had a little coffee. Not a lot. I mean, I had half a cup of decaf with a splash of coffee in it.
Someone with a coffee cup in his hand all the time. But I will say, in my defense on that, that's empty. See, empty.
You get headaches and migraines from it.
In my defense, when I get up in the morning, I have a pint of water.
Yeah, right. So today, after seeing Allie, I was this close to making myself a green tea latte, a matcha latte. And then I said, you know what? I'm going to listen to Allie. And I just made a nice big glass of water with ice in it because I'm more likely to drink it if it's cold. And she recommends putting electrolytes in it. So I did that. I put some light electrolytes in it.
And I do that too. Yeah.
And took the water with the electrolytes. And I have a really nice light brand that doesn't have overwhelming flavoring or intensity to it. So I put that in. Watermelon flavor is very good. And I found myself drinking. I drank like a pint of it. I'm like, I was thirsty. My goodness. I felt better.
I like the electrolytes because I use, you know, I put them in a 22 ounce bottle every morning for going
so by
to
the way, electrolytes, let's talk about that for a second. Electrolytes usually have citric acid in them to make them a little, if they're flavored electrolytes, they're a little tart. And guess what? Citric acid is acid. Not so good for your teeth. So if you're predominantly drinking electrolytes with citric acid in it, you may want to rethink that. You can get electrolytes that have nothing in them. That you can get electrolytes because they taste like nothing. You could put them in your coffee.
Right.
Yeah. So I have stuff that I can get. There's one that's being promoted heavily on the internet. It doesn't taste like anything. It just has like salt and minerals and sea salt concentrate in it.
We used to get those tablets that were like that.
You can get tablets.
And
but
they were
I have
fluid. They didn't really have flavor to them.
Right. But I can easily get, you know, just something that you squirt into any drink you want. And the more you put in them, it will taste a little bit salty. Depending on how much you put in, it doesn't taste like anything. And you can add it to anything else you're drinking.
There you go. Maybe that's the answer.
Yeah. Well, if you are concerned about the citric acid, the nice flavored ones tend to have citric acid in them, but the ones that are unflavored don't. They just have the minerals in them. So that would be a way to avoid the acid.
Yeah, I don't really care about the flavor. I'm just taking them because I know I need to take them because I know I'm depleting my body. So I have a 16-ounce glass of water followed by probably a cup of coffee in the morning, and then followed by another 22 ounces of electrolytes.
Yeah. And I have this much juice, this much is maybe a quarter cup of some kind of juice, like either watermelon water or pomegranate juice or smoothie juice. So I don't drink like clear sugary juices, but I will drink water, watermelon water. Boy, when I drink watermelon water, I feel better instantly. It's so hydrating. It's really nice. It just has a really nice balance of water and sugar. So it's really great. And the flavor of watermelon that I have is, the flavor electrolyte I have right now is watermelon. It's very refreshing. So I'm liking it. Yep. So, so I guess we got into a talk about dental hygiene. And so do your best. If, and the thing is, if you do nothing else and you want to up your game for your teeth, I would say consider looking into hydroxyapatite, whether in tooth, and I would recommend leaving it in, like the last thing of the day. You can brush your teeth with it, but after you're done brushing your teeth, put a little bit in your mouth and spread it around your teeth and just leave it in. And then consider getting a probiotic lozenge and sucking on that. You can get probiotic lozenges. It is possible that, so if you got plain kefir, and not everybody likes kefir, Ron likes kefir, but if you got plain kefir, I wouldn't recommend a fruit flavored kefir for last thing in the day because they have fruit and sugar in them. But if you got plain kefir and you swished that in your mouth before swallowing, and you that was the last thing you had at night, that's not a bad thing to have at night because it's going to have some protein in it. It's going to have some tryptophan in it, which is going to help calm you down, make you a little sleepy. And it's going to have these great probiotics in it. And if you sip it and you swish it in your mouth before swallowing, it's going to distribute some good probiotics in your mouth. And there may be some of the strains that are helpful. So Lactobacillus paracasei is one of them. And there's like four strains that are really good for oral hygiene. So the four strains to look for are Lactobacillus paracasei, Lactobacillus paracasei, Lactobacillus reuteri, Streptococcus salivaris Bliss K12, and Streptococcus salivaris Bliss M18. So those four strains are really helpful. And depending what product you get, they're going to have some combination of those strains. And there's not a lot of brands that have all four, so I would look for those. So in Lactobacillus paracasei, if you get anything, because you're going to go online and you're going to look, or you can go to the drugstore. The drugstore is carrying oral dental probiotics now as well, and you might be able to find it at the health food store as well. Look for them to have as many strains as possible. But Lactobacillus paracasei is a big one, and reuteri, and the Strep salivaris is a big one as well. So if it has those, even if it has just one, it's going to help you. That's what's going to be helpful for your teeth. So this was largely about teeth. So since Ron just had surgery, I had a bit about 10 foods to eat after surgery. So they're probably all reparative and anti-inflammatory or antioxidant foods. So here are things to eat after surgery. So if you eat leafy green vegetables, they're going to help. So things like kale, spinach, arugula, mustard greens, Swiss chard, they have a lot of nutrients that help to, guess what, decrease inflammation, help your immunity, and help with wound healing. Leafy greens have a lot of vitamin C. They also have minerals like magnesium and manganese, also have folate and provitamin A. Provitamin A is beta carotene or the other carotenoids that can be converted to vitamin A. And those are essential for immune function and overall health. They also have a lot of polyphenol antioxidants that have powerful anti-inflammatory and immune supportive properties. And certain polyphenols, including quercetin, quercetin is something I take every day. They're concentrated in green leafy vegetables, can help suppress the production of inflammatory proteins like TNF-alpha, which is great. Vitamin C is essential for wound healing, making them a great choice while recuperating from surgery. Guess what you can have, what a good thing to have after surgery for food is?
Anything I can get my hands on.
What did you have for breakfast?
Eggs.
Yeah. Okay. You need significantly more protein than the RDA after you have surgery.
I also had a protein shake this morning.
Yes, you did. 0.7 to 0.9 grams of protein per pound after surgery, which is 108 to 135 grams for a 150-pound person. So you're a little less than 150 pounds these days, right?
Yeah.
So you're looking at 100-ish. They're an excellent source of highly absorbable protein. They're 6 grams of protein in a large egg. So if you have two, you're looking at 12 grams of protein. Plus your protein shake. You kicked it out of the park on the protein this morning.
Right. But I also read something about you can only actually consume absorb 30 grams of protein at
right.
a time.
Right. So that's right. So if you're going to hit your protein goals, it is not a good idea to hit them all at once. Right. So you want to look at 30 grams in divided doses through the day, or maybe 30 grams in a snack or two to get your, if you have to get to 100, you're looking at eat three meals and a snack or two.
Right. Well, yeah. I do 30 grams right after morning work.
Right.
And then I usually wait a couple hours and then I'll
have
a
breakfast.
Couple of eggs.
Right? Yes.
And so I do spread it out, but I'm trying to get my protein up to over 100 grams a day.
Right, exactly. That's a good thing to do, especially at your age and activity level. That's a good thing. And you know, and especially now you're doing wound healing. So you get vitamin A and B12, zinc, iron, and selenium, which are good for immunity when you're eating eggs. Salmon. Good old salmon.
Love
has
salmon.
Protein, B vitamins, selenium, iron, zinc, and omega-3 fats. And I thought that I had an issue with salmon. I'm not entirely convinced that I do because I've been eating canned salmon with no issue. So go figure. There are studies that show that omega-3 fats can promote wound healing, enhance your immune response, and reduce inflammation when you take them supplementally. And I take fish oil every day. And 3 ounces of wild-caught salmon gives you over 70% of your daily needs for selenium, which is a mineral that regulates inflammation and immune response. So eating salmon is safe. You bet you want to talk to your healthcare provider before taking fish oil. They don't increase bleeding risk, but some surgeons advise against fish oil anyway. So I'm going to skip the fish oil tonight. I haven't skipped it previously, but I'm going to skip it tonight. Then there are berries, and I try to eat berries every day. Did you grab some strawberries today or yesterday? No. Huh.
Nope.
Okay. So, I thought my strawberry container looked a little light, but that wasn't you. Okay. So they are great. They have a lot of nutrients and compounds that can help support recovery. Lots of vitamin C for wound healing. It helps to stimulate collagen production. They have antioxidants like anthocyanins, which are plant pigments that give berries their beautiful color, and they're anti-inflammatory, antiviral, and immune supportive. And then so berries is not just strawberries. Strawberries and blueberries and blackberries and raspberries. I try to have pretty much all of those around all the time. Then nuts and seeds, almonds, pecans, walnuts, sunflower seeds, and hemp seeds are great for fueling your body during recovery. They have plant-based protein, healthy fats, vitamins, and minerals, and they're a good source of zinc, vitamin E, manganese, and magnesium. Vitamin E is a great antioxidant in your body. It protects against cellular damage and critical for immune health. And there's some studies that show that healthy vitamin E levels can improve the function of protective immune cells, like natural killer cells, which help fight infection and disease. Then poultry. So last night I had a turkey burger, which is great, and he had a beef burger. But poultry, there are specific amino acids which help to build protein, play important roles in wound healing and function, immune function. Chicken and turkey have glutamine and arginine, which are 2 amino acids that may aid recovery and healing. And glutamine provides cellular protection when you're stressed, such as during illness and injury, while arginine assists collagen production and wound healing. Arginine is rapidly depleted during times of stress, injury, and illness, making adequate intake of the amino acid that much more important. And when I drink watermelon water, I get L-citrulline, which converts easily into arginine. Then there's organ meats, which we don't really do.
No.
They're really, really nutritious. If you get organ meats, you have to make sure you're getting grass-fed and finished or free-range, depending on what animal the organ is coming from. They have a lot of immune supportive nutrients, A, iron, zinc, B vitamins, and copper. Vitamin A is essential for proper immune cell response. It helps inhibit inflammatory cells and critical for skin health and wound healing. And they're an excellent source of protein, which is necessary for recovery after surgery and illness. Then there's cruciferous vegetables. We had a stir fry the other night that had broccoli in it. It was great. Cauliflower, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, kale. They have impressive health benefits. They may support recovery. We don't eat enough broccoli. We should eat broccoli more. Cruciferous vegetables have glucosinolates, which are compounds your body converts into isothiocyanates. Isothiocyanates are the active compound in your lily family, in your alliums, your onions and garlic and stuff like that. Isothiocyanates have been shown to promote immune health by suppressing inflammation, activating immune defenses, and inducing death in infected cells, also known as apoptosis or apoptosis, however it's pronounced. Plus, the veggies pack an array of nutrients your body craves during recovery, like C and B vitamins. So shellfish, which we don't eat a lot. I will get them sometimes. I'll get smoked mussels or I'll get, mostly mussels I'll get. Occasionally I'll get smoked oysters as well. They have a lot of zinc, which is crucial for healthy immune function, and it can help speed recovery and wound healing. And six oysters, which is 59 grams, has over 300% of the daily value for zinc. Then sweet potatoes. Healthy, high-carb foods like sweet potatoes is important for recovery, and they have a lot of energy your cells require for healing, but have enzymes like hexokinase and citrate synthase, which aid if we had known that, we would, instead of having white potatoes we had shoestring potatoes last night from beautiful organic potatoes. But they were regular potatoes. We should have sweet potatoes last night. All right, so next time I'm near a sweet potato, I'm going to purchase it. And we'll have sweet potato fries or baked sweet potato. You actually need to eat some carbs because you need carbs for wound recovery. You're not eating sugar. You know, you don't have to eat, sugar. And if you're not eating bread, that's okay. But do think about eating sweet potatoes, winter squash, quinoa, things that are slow carbs that'll go into your system slowly. You can also eat green plantains, and green plantains are wonderful sauteed with a little bit of healthy salt. Sweet potatoes have anti-inflammatory plant compounds, vitamins, minerals. They have vitamin C, carotenoids, and manganese that can help immune response and help your body recover and heal, which is great. All right, so those are the 10 foods. Those are 10 foods for you to help you. So also after surgery, to help yourself heal, make sure you rest. Shocking. When you're recovering from an illness or injury, you want to make sure you get rest and get enough sleep. And lack of sleep may harm your immune function and delay recovery. Hydrate. We already talked about that. That's very important for every aspect of healing recovery and wound care. And illnesses that involve fever and diarrhea can increase your hydration needs. You should also steer clear of cigarettes and alcohol. And you had some alcohol. Well, it was your birthday.
It was my birthday.
So you had some bourbon.
You're allowed.
Yes, I know. And you, otherwise, we eat pretty healthfully. So steer clear of cigarettes and alcohol. I mean, you had a glass of bourbon. Did you have a huge amount of bourbon at your party?
Not a huge amount.
Okay. So you had a little, but you had a little bourbon because everybody knows you love bourbon, so they bring you bourbon.
Right.
So you got, how many bottles of bourbon were you handed? I think two. Yeah.
At least two, maybe three, because Christian gave me one
right
earlier.
Right. I know. But it's not like you have bourbon every day. You know, you have... maybe a week, once a week or less.
I less.
Yeah.
Less.
Because I'm not a big drinker.
I'm not a heavy drinker.
I barely drink. I know. I forget about it. I forget that alcohol is a thing that I can have. And then sometimes I have a glass of wine and I'm like, oh, this is good. It feels kind of nice. I should do this more often. And then I forget about it again.
I'll go down to the local, the watering hole and, you know, hang out with friends and stuff. And I'll have a drink while I'm there.
But, and that doesn't happen all that often. Yeah. So when you're deficient in zinc and vitamin B12, which there's no way I am because I take so much of it, can hamper recovery. And when you're recovering from illness or surgery, you need to fuel your body with foods that are high in nutrients and compounds that promote healing. Salmon, nuts. I would say any healthy protein is going to be good for you, including protein shakes. Cruciferous vegetables like your broccoli and cauliflower and kale. And avoiding smoking and excessive alcohol are going to promote optimal healing as well. And make sure you hydrate, hydrate, hydrate. And if you need to hydrate, I think having a little bit of electrolyte in your water. And one of the things that's interesting is Susan Weed got me onto this, who's a brilliant herbalist from way back. And she still, I think she's, if she's not 80, she's close. But she still posts on Facebook very useful information. One of her deals is, and you've heard me talk about this before, is that she doesn't believe in eating and drinking plain water. Her thing is she drinks herbal infusions. I don't always get around to the herbal infusions, but I will drink water with electrolytes. And I have, I've had patients come in to me and say, because water with electrolytes is all over social media. So my younger women patients, like they're in their 20s and 30s, are telling me, I put electrolytes in my water so I don't pee all day, which is very interesting, right? Because, and this is what Marissa said to me, my naturopath. She said, when you put electrolytes in your water, you're going to absorb it better. You're going to take it on better. And that's generally true. So consider doing electrolytes, but if you're concerned about the flavors, if the flavors don't work for you, if they upset your stomach, if you're concerned about the citric acid because of your teeth, you can consider getting electrolytes that have no flavoring in them, that are just, you know, your trace minerals and a quantity of salt that works for you, and do it that way. And you can put it in any water. I saw an ad on social media where a woman was offering her boyfriend this brand of electrolytes that has no flavoring, and she gave him four drinks to sip. She gave him plain water, iced coffee, iced tea, and I don't know, something else, maybe lemonade. And she said, guess which one has the electrolytes in it? And he sipped each one. He said, oh, this is good. Tastes like coffee. Oh, this is good. It's just plain water. Oh, this is good. Tastes like iced tea. Oh, this is good. Tastes like juice. I'm going to guess the plain water has the electrolytes. And she said, it was a trick question. They all had it in it. So that was impressive.
Yeah.
So that means that, you know, these electrolytes, if you add unflavored electrolytes to anything, they will help you and you won't taste them. I gotta go. So thank you for listening to me. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, Buzzsprout, and YouTube. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch ND for 30 days. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thanks for listening.